Welcome to the 40th episode of the Game 4 podcast. In this episode, still recording from home and sponsored by Gaddis Gaming, we will be talking about cooperative tabletop gaming. I'm Adam.
I'm Matt.
And we're part of Game 4. With the Game 4 podcast, we're talking to people like you about how to get into tabletop gaming, how to expand your enjoyment of tabletop gaming, how to think maybe differently about tabletop gaming, and hopefully once we can all get back together again, how to increase your overall group of gamers, your gaming group
community
and community is the word I'm looking for. Thank you. And how to make that stronger once we're able to safely get back together again. So since we're not getting together and playing too much, obviously, although some people are getting together virtually and doing that kind of stuff, what kind of stuff have you been doing recently, Matt?
So last week was the release of season 2 of Blood Bowl. So Blood Bowl is basically that it's from Games Workshop and is touted as, you know, real fantasy football because it's fantasy characters playing football.
Elves and dwarves and
exactly, and stuff like that. Yep. So I picked up season 2. I know that like you and Jason have season 1. Supposedly everything's compatible. A lot of all the teams and stuff are. There's just some rule tweaks and everything for season 2. But the new season 2 has included the rule book and included two teams and like a pitch and all that stuff. So
it's an interesting game in that it is basically like an English, it's like American football, you know, but fantasy obviously, but it's American football through the lens of like English designers. So they still refer to it as a pitch, which, you know, in American football is not referred to that, but otherwise it's not soccer. It's like American style football with like a, you know, a football-shaped football
like
and soccer, tackling and stuff like that.
Right. If soccer, football, rugby, and then, there was a video game, I forget, where it was like...
Mutant League football?
Yeah, there was one even after that, and I'm drawing a blank on it. But anyway, those all like merged together and then were played by fantasy creatures from Lord of the Rings. It was.
It's a cool game, and they even now have a slightly simpler version, too, called Blitzball, but I think you could only get that through, or Blitzbowl, sorry. I think you could only get that through Barnes & Noble for some strange reason.
I think so, but those are compatible as well. Like, you can build up your team for that, or one of the guys that bought Season 2 as well was telling me that they thought that they could convert one of their teams over, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's true, too. But yeah, no, that's very cool. Any of you done any work on that stuff? And you've started building or painting or anything like that?
Yeah, I started building very, very limited so far. I didn't get started till late on Friday-ish. So with holiday and people in town and then a bunch of work stuff, I only got the refs cleaned up and assembled and got like the markers and stuff taken off the sprues and cleaned up and stuff. But so I still have both teams to assemble, but... getting there.
yeah. Well, that's cool. And then what other kind of stuff have you been working on? Anything else?
Other than that, it's just been a lot of 3D printing. I've got some fun stuff for myself that I've printed up, doing some ornaments and stuff like that for people this year.
Christmas ornaments?
Yeah, Christmas ornaments. Nice. So I've been taking designs or designing my own for each member of my family. Because normally my wife gets that stuff. Give it out. And she usually finds it on like Black Friday shopping at the mall, which didn't happen this year. So I'm kind of taking it over. I've got everyone printed but hers is ready to go to the print. In fact, I've got it on a USB sitting next to me, so it'll be printed as soon as we get done recorded from this. And then I've got a few days to get it painted up because they'll come with St. Nick on Saturday night, I believe.
I think so, yeah.
So, it'll be fun. It's the first time I've gotten to kind of be involved because it's usually like she goes and picks everything, and I'm like, yep, those are good, but I wish... I had some insight, but and then printing up stuff for some client requests and stuff. Some people have gotten some last minute orders this year. So
nice. Yeah. And that's through your website.
Yeah. Through Gaming Matter. So,
nice.
Yep.
Yeah.
So how about you?
I've been doing I've been still streaming on Twitch, and I've been working on my Tyranid kill team on my Twitch streams, which I do Monday nights and Friday mornings. I did one last night and got a little bit further along on the Tyranids. They've been fun. I've been really enjoying them because I've never painted Tyranids before, and I like the concept of painting 7 instead of 200. So, which they're a horde style, like a swarm style army. So if you play like a normal 2,000 point game, you can have a lot of models in your Tyranid army, just like you would with like orcs or even with Imperial Guard is the same type of deal. You know, each model is got a low point value, so therefore you need a whole bunch of them. But yeah, with Kill Team being a skirmish game, I need 7, and I actually can't even run all 7 in any single one list. I have one list that has 2 of the big guys and I think 4 of the small guys, and then the other list has 3 of the big guys and only 2 of the small guys. So it's nice. I'm actually getting 2 lists out of one group of 7. So yeah, I'm getting closer to those being finished. I will probably have about 2 sessions left on Twitch, so probably this Friday and then next Monday, and then I should be done, and then I'll be switching to a new thing, a new project on Twitch, and I haven't completely decided yet. I'm moving back into Warcry, which is the skirmish version kind of Age of Sigmar to some degree, whereas Kill Team is like the skirmish version of 40K, Warhammer 40,000. And so I'm either going to be going into doing some Stormcast for my Warcry or some Gloomspite Gits, who are basically kind of like little goblins riding these crazy things called squigs, which are basically like a big ball of snot, but they have 2 legs and then and lots of teeth. And so, yeah, they're just kind of crazy and fun. But I haven't completely decided yet. I think I might do the Stormcast first just because I have this idea of the paint job that I want to do, and it's different than standard.
Okay. Yeah. Cool.
So there's that, but I haven't completely decided yet. So, but either way, I got to get building because I got to get them built before I start working on them, obviously on the, you know, on the stream. And then I had a special stream. Wasn't this last weekend, Saturday? It was the weekend before. So it was right after we did last episode. On that Saturday, I did a stream working with Board Game Geek. They were doing one of their virtual conventions again. It was a BGG at Home is the virtual convention. And so I was on Saturday morning painting, not my normal, you know, stuff, but I was painting board game miniatures actually, and showing people in the you know, who are watching the stream, this is how you can get into painting very easily and quickly, and this is how to paint these types of models. So I painted Iron Man and the Hulk from the new Kulminir Knot. Marvel United is the name of the game. And they're kind of like chibi. They're kind of like cartoony. They don't look like, you know, like the normal miniatures game. They almost look like
the Funko Pop look and stuff.
Yeah, not quite as big of a head and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, they do definitely have that sort of kind of Japanese kind of chibi look to them. And so I've never painted any chibis before and anything like that. And it was fun. So yeah, I spent about 3 hours painting up those 2 guys and got them. I didn't get the bases or anything finished, but everything else I got done. It was a lot of fun. So
nice.
Yeah. And then slightly unrelated, but it will have related effects probably to some degree, is Cyberpunk 2077, the video game, will launch on the 9th or 10th, I forget exactly, of December. So between now and the next podcast, it will launch. And I have a suspicion that may slow down my hobby progress a little bit for a while, at least my off stream stuff. You know, the streams will still be streams, but I will probably not be getting as many things done off stream for a little while, trying to get, you know, play through that and have a good time with that. I've been looking forward to it for a long time. Cyberpunk Red, which is the new RPG, which Cyberpunk the video game is based off of the Cyberpunk RPG, but the new version of the Cyberpunk RPG, which is now called Cyberpunk Red, has been released. I don't think you can buy a print version yet because I think those are still getting printed or they're on the boat, but the electronic version, the PDF version, is now available through like DriveThruRPG and places like that. I think for like $30. And I've kicked around the idea of checking it out just because I'm interested. I don't know that I see myself playing it necessarily because I just don't play much in the way RPGs, but it's a lot of fun just to read RPG books sometimes.
Yeah, the source books are sometimes are fun. Yeah, read the lore and everything in it.
Yeah. So I don't know. We'll see how I think about it in the future, but I think I'm going to, at the very least, I'm looking forward to playing the video game and stuff. So we'll see how that goes. But like I said, it will probably slow down a bit of my hobby progress for a bit. But, you know, that happens. So, yeah. On November 10th, 2020, our friends at Gaddis Gaming launched their sixth Kickstarter campaign for the first game that puts forgotten heroes of the 20th century back in action on your tabletop. This is a follow-up to their World War I alternate history success, Shattered Crown. Their new game, Empire's Fall, showcases the 761st Tank Battalion, also known as the Black Panthers, the first all-black U.S. tank unit inside an alternate World War II landscape. Although some history has shifted, gamers can bring the real heroism of these overlooked African-American soldiers to the field and take the motto of the 761st's, "Come out fighting," to heart. All backers of the Kickstarter not only receive an exceptional game loaded with custom dice and miniatures, but a collection of real history that has been forgotten for too long. They have been written out of history, and it's our job to write them back in. Will you help them? Follow the link on GaddisGaming.com. That is GaddisGaming.com. Or in our show notes. And thank you to Gaddis Gaming for sponsoring the Game 4 podcast. Yeah, I actually, absolutely. I bought into the Kickstarter actually earlier this morning.
Nice. Yep. I'm a backer. Mm-hmm. It is getting very close to the, I feel like it should be way ahead of where it is now because of how awesome it is. But, I'm hoping that this last week they, really, you know, all the people that were holding off for some reason, maybe waiting for that Christmas bonus or something to come through that are...
Seeing how, Cyber Monday was going to do for them and then Black Friday and see what kind of money they got left over. So, yeah, absolutely. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. The system guards is a cool system as well. So looking forward to the models, but also looking forward to the actual game system.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you can use your own models. So, which is nice. Yeah. Conflict 47 or any of that stuff already painted. And
Yeah. That's true. It's just regular 28mm World War II stuff. Although there are some things, you know, like there are death ray tanks and some other kind of alternate history stuff. But for the, you know, you still need to have general, you know, soldiers with tiny guns and stuff like that.
So. Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. So the subject for today's podcast is about cooperative tabletop games. I was trying to come up with an idea, and I was like looking through our backlog and stuff, the stuff that we've done in the past, and I was just kind of thinking about different things. And we had done a podcast about solo games, but we hadn't really done one about cooperative games. And frankly, cooperative games have been, well... There are more cooperative games out there than there are solo games. Solo games started to get a little bit more popular during the pandemic, but there have been cooperative games out there for a good long time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There seems to be a good deal of them, or at least cooperative rules,
And cooperative games, tabletop games, are specifically really good for a couple different things. One thing they're great for, frankly... And I've had this, I've had a friend of mine reach out to me once and he was asking, he was like, I'm looking for cooperative tabletop games that can play with at least five players. I was like, that was very specific. Why are you looking for a cooperative tabletop game that takes at least five players? And he's like, because we have a gaming group, and if we don't play cooperative games, then things can sometimes get a little spicy. You know what I mean? And that's the thing. That's the thing about cooperative games is that if you do have a gaming group that has a lot of, for lack of a better term, competitive personalities, and sometimes those competitive personalities can kind of strain game nights, then cooperative games are great because you're all on the same team in some fashion, right?
Right. There's not somebody complaining that someone's ganging up on them or, you know, targeted them just to target them, you know, when it doesn't make sense, you know, all that stuff.
Or you've just got two people. Maybe it's a couple. Maybe it's a couple and they're always against each other to some degree in these kind of tabletop games. They may be great and spectacular as a couple normally, you know, in a relationship status. But as soon as a game night starts, they all of a sudden flip gears. I mean, we've all probably been in some sort of game night situation where something weird like that's happened. Cooperative games are great for that because they don't really have to worry about it.
Right. Yeah. Like my wife and I have like two or three games that are on our like do not playlists. But none of them are the cooperative games. Competitive games that just don't seem to work well for one another. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing too is that cooperative games can also be great for when you're introducing new people to either a group or even new people who are new to tabletop gaming. You know what I mean? Like if this person's never really played a lot of tabletop games, being dropped into a tabletop game, like let's say a board game, that is also then something that they're concerned about, like, well, gosh, I'm going to get beat real bad or whatever. Or there's any kind of issue. If you're all working together towards a goal, then you can also certainly be like, well, this is why you should do this. And this is, you know, and you can explain things a little bit better without feeling like you're doing a gimme. You know what I mean? Like there's sometimes there's some people who don't like that whole, like, you know, don't treat me with kid gloves because we're playing a competitive game or whatever. Right. Exactly. Yeah. And so when you're doing cooperative, you're all playing on this together on the same team. And so getting those people, you know, into the game can be helpful. It could also be helpful, again, for people who are just also like new to the group. If you've got a group of four people who've been playing board games or you know, miniatures games or whatever for quite some time, and now you've added a new person or one person moved away and you've added a new person or whatever the deal is, starting out with some cooperative games can be really actually pretty helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they can kind of learn how everybody works, and you can learn how they work. And absolutely. Mm-hmm. And also for like young gamers, you know, like I think I've mentioned a few times, you know, like playing with my kids with a cooperative is so much easier because I don't have to worry like, am I playing too tough or too easy? You know, like I can you know, really feel like I'm gaming. And then let them know, like, you know, and on strategies, and then start to see them develop their own strategies and come up with, you know, stuff. And yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah. And it's also something, I mean, you have to be a little careful sometimes because you can have sometimes the sort of, what do you want to call it? Like alpha gaming, for lack of a better term.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you've got somebody who's like, well, we're playing competitively or cooperatively, but I'm in charge, or you know what I mean?
Right. And just like,
sometimes,
well,
you need that.
You know, you don't want to do that. You need to do it this way because this plus this, especially like the people that are probably the worst at this, you know, most guilty, I should say, are the, you know, your traditional max min gamers who will, you know, no fault of their own. They'll just see it and they'll go like, well, geez, if you did this, this, and this, you'd get, you know, five more resources than what you're doing, than the way you're doing it right now. Like,
right.
And we'll just kind of start dictating what everybody else is doing. And it turns into really it's one person playing four different parts and everyone else is just kind of watching. So watch that for yourself. I know that I have problems with it when I know a game really well and people are new to it, to not want to tell them like, well, this is how you do it. So we win. You know, so there's a fine line between, you know, helping and telling them of, you know, how to play.
Yeah. And because cooperative games are designed to be cooperative, it's a situation of like you think, well, I'm just trying to help, you know. And so but there's a line, definitely. And it's a little vague in some situations, but it is important to kind of keep an eye on it.
Yeah. And everybody has a different threshold of what they want and what they consider, you know, helping versus, you know, telling them what to do and that kind of thing. And so, you know, make sure that, it, you know, maybe bring that out if you're explaining a game, or, you know, especially if you know you're guilty of it. I know I'll sometimes go like, hey, I'll try to help everyone out. If you think I'm giving you too much information or you want to kind of make better, you know, decisions on your own, let me know. I can sit back more. And, you know, if you come right out, it seems like it goes over a lot better.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. So there's there's different types of cooperative games in the different genres. Like role-playing games are, for the most part, basically all cooperative games, aren't they?
Usually, yeah, except for, I would say, like, Paranoia is probably maybe one exception to that.
Yeah, I could see that, definitely.
Because you're really out to backstab one another, right?
Right. I mean, Paranoia, the whole concept of Paranoia, the RPG, is obviously it's a, kind of every person for themselves a little bit. I mean, that's the story of the game.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, outside of, I would say, like exceptions like that, your traditional Pathfinders and D&D and Doctor Who, Vampire, all those, yeah, are usually the group working against, you know, a common enemy, usually played by the GM.
Right. So it's not completely cooperative in that everybody is basically playing together, but they really kind of are. Like the GM is not necessarily, I think personally, a good GM is not trying to win. You know what I mean?
And right.
They're trying to make it so that everybody has a good time.
Yeah, very rarely are you out for a TPK, like a total party kill.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There are certainly GMs out there who are like that, but I personally disagree with how that's kind of done. I think it's a better idea to
right. I mean, really, that's why there's a screen there, because if people are starting to die, you know, you start pulling the punches a little bit on your dice rolls. Mm-hmm. If everyone's
you've
bored,
and force 20 in a roll, now you just like, well, maybe it wasn't a 20. You know what I mean? That's
yeah, right, exactly. Oh, I think that was cocked a little bit. I'm gonna re-roll that one.
Yeah. So it's always helpful when the DM or the GM or whatever helps with that kind of thing. But in general, most role-playing games, because it is a party of people who are trying to all work together to get some sort of goal, whatever it might be, they're generally almost always considered cooperative games. So you know, now the downside is that sometimes they can take a really long time to play, or you may have some people in your group that are more into the concept of, say, board games than RPGs or whatever. But if the people in your group are, I think, amenable to the concept of, you know, playing RPGs, they can be a great way to add cooperative, you know, like, you know, you're all working together, teamwork, that kind of stuff.
Right. Because, you know, you're not just fighting. You're maybe, you know, it could be, you know, negotiating something with a non-player characters, or solving puzzles to try to get something through. So, yeah, there's a lot of different levels of cooperation and team building that you're doing through that.
What about, and this happens from time to time in role-playing games, there's sometimes amongst the party, there's one person who seems to act counter to the goals of the party.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what, had you been in situations like that?
Yes, yes, definitely. Yes. As a GM, I subtly at first will try to persuade them not to do that, and then become more aggressive as it goes, you know, to the point where, hey, you almost died. You better hope that everybody is still talking to you and can heal you, or you're going to be rolling a new character. Try to get it away from getting to that level. But yeah, there's definitely times where, you know, either just to be funny or because they're, you know, there's always the excuse of, well, that's what my character would do, which is debatable sometimes. So, but yeah, I would say, you know, sometimes, yeah, there's someone that's trying to sink the group or a group of people trying to sink the group, but usually the GM can kind of navigate that and get everybody back on course. If not, yeah, your group is probably going to fall apart pretty fast.
Mm-hmm. I think a big thing about playing cooperative games is that you kind of, everybody does need to be on the same page. They, you know, because you're going to have, sometimes you might have somebody who just doesn't want to play a cooperative game. And in that situation, then maybe they need to find, they either need to compromise and sometimes play cooperative games. And sometimes you folks get together and play more competitive games, or they need to maybe find a different group that's maybe more, you know,
adversely
fitting to what, fitting to the what they're considering to be a fun game. And that's, it's a little bit tougher, but yeah, I think that RPGs, because they are generally almost always cooperative, other than a few notable, you know, differences, Paranoia being one that, that you've got experience with and that I've got friends that have played in the past. Yeah. I think that that's very cool. Now, speaking of board games, Pandemic, which was a word I just put in the wrong spot, is actually a very well-known cooperative board game, and maybe for me personally, one of the first ones I ever played.
Yeah,
generally, I would say board games for me always used to be like, oh, well, we're playing against each other and stuff like that. When you're a kid, you're playing Monopoly and whatever. But yeah, when, you know, I would say probably Pandemic is one of the first ones, and it's probably, is it one of the most well-known? It might be.
It's probably up there, I would say. Universally, yeah. I would say it's probably one of the bigger ones out there, yeah.
Yeah. Another big one, and you've, I mean, we've both played it, although I haven't played it in a while, mm-hmm. but, and there's tons of different types of expansions now and all that kind of stuff. And
right.
You've even got the legacy versions now too.
Yeah. There's, which has season 1, 2, and 0.
Mm-hmm. And so for those of you that don't know Legacy Games, they started with, I think, Risk Legacy. Wasn't that the mm-hmm. first one?
Yep, Risk
Legacy was the first one. Risk's been around forever, and then they decided to make a new version of Risk called Risk Legacy. And the concept is that there were things that will happen during games that you're playing where you have to actually make physical changes to the board. Like you'll have some sticker, and if this particular thing happens during a game, you now put the sticker on this board, and now this country or territory is different than it used to be. And the next time mm-hmm. you play, you're playing with this. It's modifying things, it's changing things. There are certain cards you have to get rid of, like tear up, things like that. You know, so it's as you play the game. Now the downside is that like a game like Risk Legacy, they say you can only play like I said, like something like 15 or 20 times max before like all the cool surprises are picked up.
Yeah. Right.
But, you know, it's also not a particularly expensive board game. So I guess you could technically buy it and start over again. But, mm-hmm. you know, how many times do you play board games, the same board game that
right. And even if you get done, you're still, it's basically then you have a custom board game for
exactly.
your group. So you can then play that game multiple times.
Right. So Pandemic Legacy in that situation is still cooperative, and it's mm-hmm. you as people all basically trying to fight against and stop a global pandemic virus. You know, in case you guys have ever heard of that weird far off idea.
Seems so foreign. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a fantasy game. And, but you know, the idea is also that because of the legacy thing that there are changes and tweaks. So every game's not the same. To be perfectly honest, Pandemic was never the same game to me. I mean, Risk could be the same game, kind of. And I understand when Risk Legacy came out, it made a lot of sense. And the legacy concept has been used in a lot of other board games. But with Pandemic, I never felt like, boy, this is just like last time because so many things would change. But now even more stuff changes if you play that particular version.
Right. And the Pandemic one, they also has a story to it, too, which is mm-hmm. kind of interesting as well, which is kind of different than, that Risk one was. A little bit more just event driven, whereas Pandemic was kind of teaching a story through it, like a year of dealing with the pandemic.
Mm-hmm. Zombicide is a well-known, competitive game. And that's made by Cool Money or Not, came out in the early 2010s, I think. It was like a big Kickstarter, and now there's been mm-hmm. zillions of expansions. And it's one of those also gateway games that I kind of refer to, meaning it's a game that sort of fits between board games and miniatures. I mean, mm-hmm. it's a board game, but it has a lot of miniatures, which doesn't necessarily make something a gateway game, but it also has concepts of range to some degree and line of sight a little bit and that kind of stuff. And it is actually more concerned with positionality as opposed to just like, I have lots of plastic miniatures. I'm going to move into this country. I'm going to move into that country. I'm going to, it's a right. little bit different that way. I'm going into different rooms and things like that. And I have to make sure the door's open and I have to worry about noise and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so as players who are working together in that, because basically you're all trying to get to the helicopter or some other kind of, MacGuffin that will transport you away. From this kind of horror show of all the zombies on the board, it very much helps to work together. I have seen people play it a little bit adversarially because of the noise mechanic. I have seen people be like, oh, I'm going to make a bunch of noise over here. And then that means you're probably going to get stuck. Oh, that's really too bad. And so it can happen.
There's definitely people that are being used as bait and stuff. Yep.
Every once in a great while, yeah. And sometimes you do it on purpose. I mean, like sometimes you go like, I'm going to go over here and I will die so that the rest of you can win.
Right.
And you see that in the movies, the zombie movies too. Somebody sacrifices or whatever. But there's other times when people get sacrificed against their will, which is not necessarily great. But, but yeah, it's also another good game along those lines. And there's a zillion different miniatures in there and too, which makes the game look even more impressive when you have a whole bunch of zombies all over the board.
Right.
And then, like I said, there have been plenty of expansions now. There's a fantasy one called Black Plague. There's a sci-fi one that I can't remember the name of off the top of my head. Infestation or something like that.
That sounds right.
Yeah. But there's been a bunch of different, major expansions, minor expansions and things like that. So that's a game that as a group, as a co-op playing group, you've got a lot of you know, inventory there. You've got a lot of games that can be played just off of that one system. Like once you learn the system,
right,
being able to switch from the main game to Black Plague and stuff like that, you know, is not the end of the world. It makes a lot of sense. So,
mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Have you ever played Dead of Winter?
I have. Mm-hmm. It is, yeah, it's fun. It's a survival with zombies, but the zombies are really kind of a...
like more of a concept almost?
Yeah, it's more like, because it's more like the nature, you know, it's like, you know, it's really... Yeah. Man versus nature, but the nature is that you're basically in a zombie apocalypse.
Yeah,
but you're really trying to survive.
And it's less of a gateway game, I would say, than say something right. like Zombicide.
It does have, it does have a possible traitor mechanic with it. Mm-hmm. I do know that some people will just automatically rule out, like, nope, we are not going to have the traitor mechanic in it. Otherwise, it is kind of a random one where you're not guaranteed that there's a traitor, but there might be a traitor.
Yeah. And
the traitor wins by making sure you guys lose in a very specific way.
I was initially considering adding House on Haunted Hill. Or no, Betrayal at the House
Betrayal,
on Haunted
Hill,
wherever it's going. Betrayal, I was thinking about adding to this list because it's also cooperative, but it's almost always then somebody becomes the traitor.
Versatile, like right.
It's not one of those games where you can just be like, we're not going to do that. You know what I mean? Like, you can do that with Dead of Winter and just be like, we're not going to go that road.
Right.
You can't really do that with Betrayal House.
No, there's a few scenarios that do end where you're cooperative, but not very many. And
yeah.
There's no real way to guarantee you're going to have that.
Mm-hmm. And without the scenario that makes the switch, the game doesn't really, you're just basically walking around. You know what I mean? In that game, basically you're walking around as a group and you're all on the same page and everything's cool. And then something finally gets triggered and then the game really starts. Right. And you're right. The majority of the time it goes from being, it's not that the game becomes competitive. It's just that usually one person now is on the opposite
right.
team.
And I've fail to understand the mathematical way that this happens, but if you're playing with one new person, it will almost always be the one new person who gets picked. Like the very first time I played, they're like, oh, don't worry about it. There's very little chance, you know, of the five of us that you'll be the one that gets picked, and I got picked. So then I was like science. Thrown into it, like, I have no idea what I'm doing. And right. It was a very poor ending for me, but...
I think Dead of Winter works a little bit better that way because you can just decide just kind of not use that part, which is fine.
Right.
But yeah, and there are expansions to Dead of Winter as well. I don't think there's a legacy version, is there?
No.
Never heard of Dead of Winter Legacy. No, I don't think so either. And then a game that I don't have actually almost any, any experience with is the word I'm looking for, but you do is Gloomhaven. The only experience I have with Gloomhaven is I won a copy of it and then I sold it to you. So, and I had to carry it from the car a couple of times and that was easy. But other than that, Gloomhaven it's an interesting gateway game in my opinion, because it's a kind of a gateway between board games and RPGs.
Right, yeah, because it's definitely like a dungeon crawler feel to it. The nice thing is you don't have to have a GM, so that's nice. You're all basically playing on the same team. And then there's basically like AI rules for how, you know, creatures and everything else move and navigate and attack.
Which is why you don't need a GM then.
Right, so it's all kind of set up that way. Yeah, you can even get apps that will help you control that and stuff as well, which is nice. It's Imperial Assault similar, but Imperial Assault, there you're still using kind of that one person will usually control the campaign mode for the bad people. I think there are some people out there that have rules of how you can do it without that. Generally,
almost ever, there's always going to be something on Board Game Geek where someone's like, I figured out rules to how to do this solo or how to do
whatever. But it's get rid of really the GM, not. Whereas right. Gloomhaven, was built from the ground up that way, which is nice.
Right.
And the second one is which is Frosthaven, I believe.
There was technically Jaws of the Lion, which was an expansion / standalone.
Right, and there was another
came out.
Yeah, and there was a true expansion for Gloomhaven, and then Frosthaven went through Kickstarter, I think, spring of this last year.
Did it make $1 billion?
It made a lot of money.
So
I think it's going to be delivered probably this next spring. I haven't heard of it coming any sooner than that. So.
Yeah. So, I mean, Gloomhaven is, you know, you need some space because it's a big, big box and it's very heavy. So, you know, make sure you lift with your legs. But it is definitely a great game to play cooperatively with friends because of all the reasons Matt mentioned. And the big one, of course, is the fact that there's not, you don't need a GM, because sometimes even if, like with RPGs, having a GM is just the way things are done, and it makes total sense. And it's rare that there is a combative nature between the GM and the players. Like I said, like we said, that's not great. But in board gaming, if there's a GM, sometimes it kind of runs things. That competitive sort of aspect can still sort of sneak back in a little bit. So it's nice to have Gloomhaven or any other game where there is some sort of AI that allows you to say, okay, well, this is the way the monsters would react. And it's not, because, I mean, how many times you've been like, well, the monster wouldn't have done that. Why? You're just doing that because you're mad at me because I ate the last Cheetos or whatever the deal is.
Right.
And with a game with it, they're like, look, there's a list here. Step one is do this. If this doesn't happen, then do this. And it's almost like programming, like if this, then that, you know?
Right, exactly. Yep.
So yeah, but in a simpler fashion. So it's helpful. You've played Time Stories. I've not.
Time Stories has like a base game, and then it's got tons of expansions where it is basically a new story for each one. That's a good cooperative one. And that's basically the premise is that you're kind of like Assassin's Creed. You are kind of being teleported back in time, but this time you're sent back to basically take up bodies to investigate some kind of mystery that happened at some point. And you're trying to solve it by interacting and getting clues and stuff like that, and trying to do that before you basically get sent back. And, you know, there's penalties for going back and forth too many times. You can lose you're trying to do as much as you can, but sometimes, you've got to go back and forth a couple times so that you can hit stuff at the right thing. And yeah, so it's got some good puzzle solving story into it, and definitely good cooperative because you're trying to, you know, spread out your resources, maximize what you're doing with, you know, before everything loses.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. No, I've seen it at the game store, actually. Like my local game store has got like the base copy and then a bunch of the expansions. But yeah, you're right. It does have a zillion expansions. Everything's very white. All the boxing, all the box art and stuff is very white. But yeah, it's well designed visually, at least. Have you played The Captain is Dead?
I have not. I've heard of it. Okay. I've seen tons of stuff about it, but have not played it.
And I know it's a little bit more along the lines of, I don't want to say it's not a LARP, you know what I mean? But it's one of those games where it's not just like we're going to sit here in front of it. Like you're still sitting at a table and you still have some boards, but it's a little bit more interactive. I think, you know, manually, you know, it's not just like, well, I move this marker over here. There's like certain things, I mean, that you have to kind of do that and it's about speed and working together and stuff like that. I think Captain Sonar is a little bit like that too, but Captain Sonar, have you played Captain Sonar?
Yeah, I've played Captain Sonar. Yeah. Captain Sonar is basically team co-op versus team co-op for one versus one, which wouldn't be very fun with it. Normally, four versus four is the optimal.
So it's cooperative, but it's two teams cooperating to go competitive against each other, which is
right because you're trying to sync, find and destroy the other team's sub.
Yeah, I think The Captain is Dead started actually as an indie game that was produced and sold on GameCrafter. I swear I remember that.
It is because it's one of their ones that they always advertise when I see them at the conventions and stuff.
Yeah, but now it's through some other company or something.
Oh, is it?
Full blown. I think so. It's like a full blown, like fancy professional job now, but I honestly off the top of my head, can't remember who's through. So, have you played Mysterium?
I believe I've played Mysterium once. Mysterium,
when I was doing a bit of research.
The seance game, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That one, it just never struck me as I don't know. Yeah. I know there's a lot of people that really like it. It just, I just didn't fit for me for some reason.
Yeah, I found a couple of articles that were like, oh, top 10, you know, co-op board games and stuff like that. And I couldn't remember if you had played that one and told me about it or not. But
yeah, when it came out, evidently, it was very popular.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you're interested, actually, in board games that are competitive, or sorry, I keep saying that, cooperative, if they're co-op board games, two really great places to check, frankly, are Board Game Geek, of course, which is where pretty much everything board game can be found. And then also a website just called coopboardgames.com, which is spelled like coop, like a chicken coop. There's no hyphen. So it's COOP boardgames.com. And that site is dedicated just to co-op board games and has reviews and things like that. So
yeah, and the reviews are kind of taken from the co-op's perspective, how well they work co-op and stuff like that, which is kind of a neat way to do it.
No, I agree. I agree. In miniatures games and miniature wargaming, co-op games are a little bit more rare, frankly. Mm-hmm. Miniature wargaming is designed to be, for the most part, generally competitive, because very frequently it's one player versus one player. So, you know, you do that. Now, that being said, there are games out there that are cooperative. Very frequently, if a game is cooperative, it probably actually has also got solo games, too. So some of these, I think we will mention, we're also in our solo games podcast, because once you've basically built the AI, for lack of a better word, when you've built that AI to make your AI opponent be able to do its job, then doing competitive against or co-op against that is not that hard. So Blackstone Fortress can be played cooperatively or it can be played solo. And Blackstone Fortress is from Games Workshop. So it's kind of one of those boxed games where it comes with all the models and the board and all that stuff that you need to play. Dungeon Saga from Mantic is definitely got the ability to play cooperatively if you want to. And that's much more of a traditional kind of dungeon crawl, but still miniatures, you know. And Dungeon Saga, I really like Dungeon Saga, especially just as a product. It comes in a box that looks like a big book. And even opens like a book, and then everything's inside of it, and you can like put it on your shelf, and it just looks like a big book. It's really cool. But yeah, I like Dungeon Saga.
And that comes with like its own miniatures, like Saga, or is it? Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, Dungeon Saga is from Mantic, and because they also made Star Saga, which was the sci-fi version, which did not look like a book at all, sadly. And actually, the expansions for Dungeon Saga have also all looked like books too. But yeah, it comes with little skeletons and little fantasy people. It's, you know, dungeon, so it's fantasy stuff. And it comes with like little tiles to make different kind of dungeon layouts and stuff like that. They're cardboard tiles, but still. So it's cardboard tiles and miniatures and things, and it all fits inside of this. I mean, it's a big book. It's like probably, if you look at the spine, it's probably, I don't know, 3.5 inches across. So it's a big thick book that you would put on your shelf, but it's still kind of book sized. It's kind of cool. Fallout, like based off the video game Fallout series, Fallout Wasteland Warfare, has both, you know, solo. And so then because it's got solo rules, you can also then, although you have to download, I don't think the solo rules come in the original box. So you have to go to the website, but, you can then, you know, you pretty much any game that you can play solo, you can also play competitively if you want to, or sorry, cooperatively. I keep getting those mixed up. But you can also play it competitively if you want to, where you could be like, and there are a bunch of games out there, Frostgrave to some degree, which is from Osprey and also very popular. Like that game is generally, there are extra people, like basically, so Frostgrave is the concept of you are two opposing treasure hunting bands of ne'er-do-wells who are going into this quickly thawing out city that's been frozen for 1,000 years, and you're going in there to find treasure and things like that that are you know underneath the snow. But you don't have to fight against each other. You could technically just get in there, get treasure, and get out, because the thing is that also the city has AI run skeletons and other weird monsters and things like that and whatever that you have to fight. So that can be a cooperative game in that you could just be saying, let's go in there, fight against these skeletons and all this stuff and then get out. But it doesn't have to be. You also might be like, well, I can get more treasure if everybody on the other team is dead. So you've got that going on as well.
Sure.
And Fallout Wasteland Warfare can be kind of done the same way, but it does have the ability for you to be able to play it, cooperatively as well. Another game that I've been liking a good deal lately is a game called Zona Alpha, also from Osprey, same company that makes Frostgrave. And that has a free expansion that you can download that are basically both solo and cooperative play. And so that's kind of cool. And another game I like is Planet 28, which is a very indie kind of miniatures game. And they had a paid expansion that you could buy that added solo and co-op type rules into it. So you could go that direction.
Nice. How much was that?
Yeah, so, well, I mean, like the base game is like, I don't know, $5 or $6. And I think the expansion's about the same. So okay. Yeah, it's not because bad. You're buying PDF. Yeah. You're buying PDFs and they're pretty inexpensive. Although, like I said, Planet 28, I like quite a bit because it's all designed and laid out and even illustrated all by one person. And he just does this kind of sort of interesting kind of retro look to it. It's all black and white and everything. But yeah, it's a fun skirmish kind of sci-fi game that has a lot of features that I like, but is not too deep. I mean, like Planet 28, the original game is, including the cover, I think 16 pages. So it's real small. With collectible card games, there's not particularly a lot of cooperative stuff
right.
out there.
Right. Because like if you go into like the kind of the crossover, like, you know, card games for board games, like, you know, your legendaries and stuff like that, there's definitely, you know, a lot of good co-op games. Sentience of the Multiverse, Sentinels.
Right? Oh, yeah. Sentinels of the Multiverse, yeah. There's a bunch of, yeah, the games that are card games, but I wouldn't say they're collectible.
They're right? definitely not collectible. Exactly. If you're looking at true collectibles, like the only thing I found was like, you know, there's, you know, you could take, you know, Magic the Gathering, like solitaire rules, and then basically do like a split deck or kind of do combined decks or like split resources. But basically, you do all the solitaire version and then figure out a way to add yourself in or to beef up like whatever the AI rules are to kind of go at it. So not exactly a co-op, but, you know, there would be some ways to kind of play if you really were against playing against each other.
Yeah, I didn't find many of those either. That game in general, that genre, I mean, in general, the collectible card games are designed to be, frankly, kind of competitive. I mean, that's probably like the most out of all the different genres, the most tournaments probably come out of the like collectible card game.
Because and that's kind of what makes them collectible is getting those ideal decks and stuff like that. You know, not trying to make the best deck for your friend.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there are plenty of ways you can play those games that are they're still competitive, but you can play with a little bit more of a, what am I looking at? Like an even playing field. I've seen people, there's something called a pauper draft, I think it's called, where basically someone will take a huge pile of their like common cards and then put them all together. And then you all draft a bunch of common cards and build draft decks. And then you're still playing against each other, but then nobody's got like their super expensive cards that they brought or something like that. They're all using the same, frankly, garbage to play against each other. And then it comes down a little bit better to like, what do we like, you know, the skill level and stuff like that.
Skill so, versus money. Yeah.
Right. Right. But it's still not cooperative. It's just not competitive to the same monetary degree that that game system can sometimes be. So, yeah, there's, I don't know. It'd be interesting to see. I wonder if a collectible cooperative game would be something that would sell. You know what I mean? Like, I think a big portion of what gets people to buy more cards is so that they can win more games.
Right. Because, I was trying to think. Because, I mean, like you've also got, like, cooperative games like Pathfinder, the card game, where you're, you know, it's cooperative and it's cards. But, you know, the whole idea and like is to try to beat it so you get better treasure. So being able to just open packs for better treasure wouldn't, you know, would kind of ruin that dynamic. So, yeah, it'd be hard to figure out a reason to make it collectible.
Yeah.
But still a reason for people to play cooperative.
Yeah, no, I think that there are a bunch of different reasons why we're not seeing a lot of new collectible card games. Like there were a lot of collectible card games all at once at one point. Mm-hmm. And I know admittedly there's something to do about some sort of patent and some licensing and some stuff like that. I know, but there are still other collectible card games out there besides Magic, but you're not seeing nearly as many anymore. And I think that I feel like that alone to some degree would make it less likely that somebody would come along and try to make a co-op collectible card game.
Right.
You'd have a lot of things stacked against you right from the start in that situation. Mm-hmm. So it's probably not something you're going to see too soon. But if you folks know of any collectible cooperative card games, let us know. Either, you know, shoot us an email, or if you're listening to this on YouTube, put a comment in there. And if you've got some other games in the other genres, whether it's some miniatures ones or some board games or some, I mean, basically almost all, like we said, almost all RPGs are cooperative. So that doesn't necessarily, but if you've got some other board game ideas that are great co-op games, or especially the miniatures games as well, if you've got some of those, I'd like to hear about a couple more of those myself.
Absolutely.
Just because it would be nice to know that stuff. But yeah, cooperative games are great because people can come away from a game night generally feeling better about themselves because they at least haven't had to go up against, other players,
right,
and worry about like how well they did or how well they didn't do and that kind
right.
of stuff.
It's a team defeat or a team win. And either way, you feel kind of good that, hey, we almost won, or, we beat them, but, doing this stuff.
Yeah. Or boy, we really sure did get rocked, but you were all in the same team. It's not a situation of I got rocked and this other person won. It's more of an idea of like, we still at least had a good time, worked together. And, there are some people out there who just have no interest in that kind of thing and are only interested in the competitive. And that's fine, too. But I think for a lot of people, the idea of working together towards a goal is generally well received. I mean, that's what society kind of is. Don't want to get too deep here, but that's kind of like all of us working together is sort of how society works.
Yeah.
So, if you're interested in cooperative games, like I said, take a look at Board Game Geek and coopboardgames.com. If you're looking at board games, miniatures, I have not seen like a particular site that just functions and looks at those things. Probably because there's not as many of them out there, and same with the collectible card games, but yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, thanks again for listening to this episode of the Game 4 podcast. If you've got questions or comments and you're watching on YouTube, please leave a comment below. If you're listening via your favorite podcast player, or you just aren't in the whole YouTube comment section thing, then you can feel free to reach out to us via email at podcast@iamgame4.com. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And you can check out our website at www.iamgame4.com. That is www.iamgame4.com. Thanks.